Hello and welcome to the podcast, What We Teach Our Children. I'm Kim Clyden. How do we nurture creative, connected, resilient, emotionally intelligent and empowered children? And they say it takes a village, or what we might call today a community. So if you're feeling overwhelmed by the responsibility, you're not alone. We're surrounded though by people who can support us, your family, friends and professionals, who all play an influential role in shaping our children. Imagine if your parents, teachers, relatives or carers told you another story. Your life story would be completely different. I believe we can change the narrative for our children, but to do that, we need to change our story. This podcast is about everyone who plays a role in that story at every level of society. Today, Kayleen's story provides some perspective on last week's conversation with Michael Ray, who is an advocate for women's equality, champions men also in their role as primary caregivers. For women who want a career and a family, sharing that role is vital. Raised in Sydney's western suburbs through the 70s, Kayleen is the youngest of five and the only sibling who didn't experience living a transient life along the New South Wales coast due to her dad's career with the Department of Main Roads. Kayleen shared with me her fondest memories of growing up in a big family with community-based, service-minded people where the home was a hive of activity. Something she says created her core values underpinning a sense of gathering and collectiveness which she based her career on.
We were a working class family. I was taught that I could do anything. But I was also, when I did start to pursue things that were, you know, like no one in my family had gone to university. And I started university after I was married and had children. I had a real interest in study. I always loved learning, loved school, loved new things. But when I started university, my family were very much like, oh, what are you doing that for? But very proud too. No one ever dissuaded me. But it was very much, you know, you can do anything. Oh, but what are you doing that for?
What sort of support did they provide you though, like through those formative years, that made you so tenacious and interested in study?
Look, I think that came from being the youngest of the family. I'll often say I was very spoilt because I had this 12 years between my eldest brother and I, and his wife of, I've lost count how many years, they met when I was five. They were high school sweethearts and have been together ever since. And so my sister and I were very close. There's 10 years between her and I. She took me to get my ears pierced when I was six or seven or something. And then my other two brothers, there's like 8 years or 6 years, I think, between him and the next brother and I. So, you know, so we were very close, the last two. So, you know, it was kind of that first three and then the two of us. And the other side though, we were working class, so we didn't have a lot of money. So university wasn't an option purely because we couldn't afford it, you know. It was go get a job and, you know, play your own way. And I think Mum was, as I said, always very supportive. You could do anything. In particular, one thing that's really interesting is my sister and I, when my husband and I bought our first home, we started, as you do with a new home, you renovate, you change things, we tile floors. But it wasn't my husband and I were doing that. It was my sister and I were doing that. And my mother used to say to everybody, my daughter's the handyman, because we just do it all on our own. You know, there's a level of independence. My mum's a very quiet, warm, shy, motherly person, very wise. You know, she always had a wise word. I had a love for learning, and I had a family that, you know, they were interested in what you were doing and, you know, where are you going. They might not have understood. But, you know, when I studied philosophy, you know, my dad was sort of saying, started talking about what was it I learned, and I went, oh, is that really a table, Dad? He's like, what do you mean it's a table? It's because it's a table. So there was a lot of that kind of, you know, fun, and but they were always very interested.
So how did that influence the way you raised your two children with your husband?
My husband and I have been married for 32 years now, and we laugh and joke and say we've been together for 15. I've always worked and travelled for work, and my husband has always, you've been the primary caregiver to our kids, if I'm fair. But for us, it was always about quality time, not quantity, time with our children. And I got that from my mum. You know, my mother was the epitome of motherhood in my eyes. You know, her life revolved around her children, her grandchildren, her great-grandchildren. I think there's great-great-grandchildren now. Kids always just had her full attention at all times, and she loved to read to them. She would sit there with, you know, multiple children on her lap. And her and my dad had a beautiful bond with my children, and I think that the grandparent relationship, I didn't get that. My father's dad died before I was born, and my mother's mother died before I was born, and my father's mother died when I was only, you know, 5 or 6. And my mother's father, though, lived, I think, until I was about 19, but lived in Queensland. So I didn't have that. But it was beautiful to see, you know, my mum and dad and the relationship with my kids. And I think that extended into me. It was interesting because I did feel a bit of inadequacy with, you know, with mum being this amazing mother, and you know, and I would travel and for study or for work or whatever. But she was always there, and Dad was always there, and to support Andy and the kids and me if we needed them. And that made a huge difference, I think. I think when you get that extended grandparenting, it allows you to explore things a bit better. And then that goes down to your children, that when you want to give them time, you know, it's just that quality time. Like when you are home, it's not about worrying about how much money's in your bank or you know, what have you got to do this week? What are the chores you've got to do? You can actually spend more time with the children.
Given that your children are now grown and they're adults living on their own and doing their own thing, how do you feel about the overall raising of your children?
I've met a person yet that didn't express some level of guilt as a parent that I wasn't good enough, or I didn't do this, or I couldn't have, shoulda, woulda. And of course I went through that as well. And being away and then come back and you think, oh, poor kids, they've got mums there helping them with their projects, you know, other kids have got mums, you know, helping with their projects, and you know, my kids were doing it on their own, you know, they were packing their own lunches. You know, Andy, he was doing other things as well, right? So it was sort of like, at one point we were managing a motel, and so we had the commercial kitchen, and it was very much go in there, get your lunch, off you go to school. And I reflect on that now, and I reflect on the adults that they are now. And they moved out of home straight as soon as they finished high school. Both of them went off to study, and they've never come home. Tyler's come back because of transitioning from different things, and stayed for a few weeks or whatever. But they've never really come home. And I hear a lot of parents say, oh, you know, they've been back, you know, or they're back with me or whatever.
Or they haven't moved out because they can't afford it.
Yes, right. And I look at them and I think I've raised resilient, independent, you know, to move out at the age of 17, 18 and live good, healthy adult lives and being good citizens and working their way through, you know, contributing to society. I think I look back now and go, yeah, you know, yeah, I travelled, I did these things, and I still raised two beautiful, healthy children.
So you're proud.
I'm proud of. Yes, very proud.
Very proud. But proud of the job you did as well. I mean, I had a reflection in my kitchen one night when my children had left home, and they, you know, my daughter lives a completely different life to my son. She's married with three children. My son lives in the city, and he's doing really well in his career, but totally different. But I felt really proud as a single parent to think that I'd actually given them the skills and the tools through whatever hardship to create a life on their own.
Yes, absolutely. And I, you know, I listen to the challenges and the trials that they have as young adults, and, you know, I listen to their political views. I think my daughter went to a protest somewhere along the line once upon a time, and I was so proud of her. I was like, you go, you know, if this is something you believe in, you do it. And I find they are very supportive, loyal friends. I'm really proud of that. I know I tell a story of my son gone out one night, met a bunch of people, as you do when you're, you know, out at clubs and things. And one young man that he was talking to had some mental health problem. And I think it was like a night or two later, he had some sort of episode, and 2 o'clock in the morning, and somebody could only find Tyler's phone number in his phone and rang him. Now, Tyler only met this boy once, and he was in his car and he was there and he was doing whatever. And I don't know that they're even connected any longer, but it was just that was the mindset. Someone needs help and I'm there. And my daughter's the same, you know. She's very active in the LGBTQI plus community and very much an ally, and if anybody has, you know, any problems, they can pick up the phone and ring her. So, you know, I love that about them. I love that they are generous, loyal, committed people.
From what I'm hearing, your example that you said, even though you were a working mum who may have been absent some of the time, they've followed in your footsteps by taking the steps to get a higher education. How has that worked out for them, and what are they doing now?
Yeah, look, both of them have gone on different paths. I had said to them, you know, I don't mind what you do as long as you studied your craft and follow that passion. So Emily wanted to be a writer, and I said, that's okay, you go and study that. So she went and studied creative writing. She's now doing her master's in creative writing and is working at the university, and she, you know, cosplays, and she's got this amazing group of friends. That these talents that come out of these young people in creating costumes and things is amazing. And she really embraces that. She is who she is, and she's unapologetic for that. And she's got a group of people around her that, you know, they're all like-minded, you know, and they'll tell stories about the challenges they've had in their families and people not being so supportive. And Tyler's now, you know, he's working in Sydney. He's a musician, so he's working to support that. Talking about traveling overseas, you know, their horizons are just broad. And I feel like I've shared with them what was shared with me, and that is, you could do anything in the world.
Plus, your husband had a huge influence. He's a musician as well.
Yes.
How do you think that changed Tyler's life in relation to his connection?
Well, and both of them, you know, and I always laugh and I say, you know, I'm the only non-creative one in our family. You know, Andy was an artist in a variety of ways, and musician. What was interesting, though, was when Tyler was interested in music, wasn't until his later years in school. And he said, do you think Dad would mind if I took his bass guitar? Of course he wouldn't mind, you know. So he took up music and had that passion. So he had a passion for music and had a passion for soccer, and he had to figure out which one that was going to be. And my husband's also an artist with Barbie-sized dolls, if you like. He creates Roman soldiers and does this amazing historical representations. And, you know, and I've got photos of him and Emily sitting there playing with dollies.
And now she's dressing up like
one. And now
one.
She's dressing up, right. He was very much, in the early days, he was very much in pop culture. So, you know, the DC comics and all those sorts of things. And you know, I laugh and say, you know, he brainwashed our children, because, you know, Emily got very much involved in the pop culture, and now she keeps doing all of that. And, you know, and I love it. I love just sitting, watching the three of them just create. Just create. And I feel like my job is to just keep honouring that and supporting that and encouraging it.
So as I know personally, family relationships don't always go to plan. And as we grow and we change, often we can drift away from our family. How is that right now, and how do you feel?
Actually, it's really interesting, because this is the first Christmas that we're now starting to go, oh, what are we going to do? Tyler's in Sydney. He's actually going to be working a lot through Christmas. He's got a lot going on. You know, as a contrast to last year, Tyler had spent some, did some work out at Uluru, spent 6 months out of there, of course found new friends, particularly international friends, and his stint there kind of finished at about November, and they were, he was coming home and he had a bunch of friends that were, you know, one was Italian and a couple were English, and so we said, well, bring them to our place for Christmas, you know, like this is the orphans' Christmas. And so once again, we had, you know, Christmas. A community Christmas, and we've always done that. So this is the first year we're going, oh, what are we going to do? You know, we're thinking about, we will all just fly down to Sydney before Christmas, have some time as a family, and then, you know, go back our own way. So Christmas might be very, Christmas Day might be very quiet for us. I'm a pragmatic person as well. And because I've always been this traveller, and just because it's not a particular day that everybody else in the world goes, oh, this is the day, I don't think that will bother us too much.
So do we put too much importance on those special holidays where we try to make such an effort?
I think so. And I guess that's probably some of, you know, Andy's and my teaching of our kids as well. My husband and I never celebrated Valentine's Day because my husband used to say, I don't need somebody to tell me when I have to tell my wife I love her.
So I'll
show her that.
Chocolate flowers.
Right. And he was also the type of person that would bring chocolates and flowers home randomly. So I think that is definitely something as a family that we have never put too much stock in a day. In a, you know, we can do something at some point. It's, you know, again, it's that quality time, not quantity time. You know, when we are together, we bond over silly memes and rhymes and videos, and we're very much a family that loves to laugh. We have a group chat, a family, and I think a lot of families do these days, but I don't know how many people have renamed themselves. So, and I'm sitting there going, I don't remember what they named me, but my husband is Felicia, my son is Nancy, and my daughter is Jeremy. And I have a male name as well. So I can't remember what it is now because you don't see it in the chat. But that's what we do, you know. And so I just love watching silly comments coming from my children to each other or to us, or sharing funny photos or any of those sorts of things. And so we're always connected.
Well, it's easy these days, isn't it? I mean, we have so many channels of communication.
Yeah, yeah.
And one thing we had spoken about earlier was the fact that you're on TikTok, which is something I haven't embraced quite yet, but a lot of my friends have. How is that with your family? Because you've got, you know, children in the next generation.
It's growing up in, when Emily was a teenager, she was about 13, when Facebook came out, and I'd gone away. And when I had come back, a friend of hers mother had signed her up to Facebook without my permission, without my, knowledge, my consent.
Yeah.
And you can't put that genie back in the bottle. And what I felt I had to do was have a conversation with Emily about, I am a friend on Facebook. We are not friends, but I am a friend on Facebook. You know, so I could monitor and see everything she was doing. As time went on, one of the challenges I found with her was that as a parent, we get taught, you know, you hear about these, you know, dangers and things you need to do. And so you teach your kids, you don't know who that person is at the other end that you're talking to. They might be telling you they're a 14-year-old girl, but they're quite possibly a 40-year-old creepy guy, you know, around the corner. And I can remember back then, I can't remember how she got engaged, connected to this person, but I had inklings that this was somebody portraying themselves as something they shouldn't have been. And I had this conversation with her and big lectures and, oh, you know, don't you understand that, you know, these are the dangers? And anyway, got to the end of it and I said to her, so do you understand what I'm saying, or do you think I'm just being a nutty mother? And she said, no, you're just being a nutty mother. I was like, what do you do with that? And I thought all I could do was plant the seeds and keep monitoring. Anyway, she's been prolific in social media and particularly going into the cosplay community, and so TikTok was, again, you know, kind of that next step for her, and, you know, videoing whatever it was she was dressing up with and acting and doing these things. You know, everything in moderation and everything with a broad mind, right, and knowing that not everything you see is as it is. You know, and you see these things on TikTok and you laugh and you think, oh, that was a funny little accident. And then the reality is it probably wasn't. Someone staged the whole thing. You keep all of that in mind. These things can be really entertaining. You know, these things that Emily's putting up, and the you know, various skits and things that her and her friends are doing, and I love it. I love watching them. At one point, she had one of these things went viral, and she had something like 100,000, which is probably nothing these days, but it was 100,000 likes of this, you know, thing that they did. And yeah, it was funny, but it was like, oh, okay. This is the thing that's drawn the attention. But, you know, social media has some awful, scary things. But I think it's, if you're all connected as a family, it can be really fun and can really contribute to, you know, to who you are as a family. And you can see some of the things, save things that we've been watching, and then when we get together, for whatever reason, share it around the family and laugh and, you know, these silly things.
Well, you mentioned there's also a dark side to social media. What's the most challenging thing you faced, you know, like in following your daughter and the way things are changing so rapidly?
Look, beyond that, her having been signed up by somebody else, and I don't think you can really keep your kids away from the rest of the world, and you've got to appreciate that happens. But one of the worst things for Emily was she was a victim of AI tampering of one of her photos, and so somebody had gotten, you know, downloaded one of her photos and then turned it into pornographic photograph, and that was all through AI. And I think AI has some amazing capabilities and will do some amazing things for us, but we have to understand and be ahead of, you know, some of these dangers. You know, in the wrong hands, these things, you know, people can do awful things.
Quite a somber note to leave on, and some sage advice from Kayleen about the dangers of social media, even for adults. Plus the importance of having open conversations with children to prepare them for that virtual world. Enjoying this podcast? Well, don't miss an episode when you connect with me on my website, kimclidon.com. That's kimclidon.com. You'll find all my contacts, social media, children's picture books, and you can also subscribe to my newsletter. Next week, we meet a Melbourne woman whose life mission is to empower children in remote regions of Fiji. Since 2012, Fiona Luth and her charity Fiji Book Drive has donated 348,504 books to 238 schools and kindergartens, changing lives and communities. This podcast is recorded at Launchpad Studios, thanks to Split Spaces.